Hello, listeners, and welcome to another edition of the 9 Years Podcast Lockdown Show. I'm Kevin Boris, and I'm joined, as ever, by the perpetual George Jones, who joins us from sunny Cornwall. How are you doing, George?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
I'm absolutely fine, thank you very much. That's very kind of you to ask. Also joined, but also on the south coast, but much, much further east, in equally sunny Eastbourne, by Mr. Chris Draper. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, all. Chris. How are we doing?
All right, Chris.
Oh, I forgot. I was going to do the Friday night dinner introduction. Hello, all. But I didn't do it.
too late.
It's too late now. I'm not doing it with Unai Emery because it's too obvious. Not really.
Unai something Emery. Smells nice, though.
Something does. Very nice indeed. I thought we had someone called Wilson on the show. It'd be very funny. So we are today's presenters. Obviously, we are known as the development squad. One of us has to be under 23, and that's also the case. So that's good. George is, apparently. So Nick isn't with us today because Nick is working. Nick is a key worker and has to work. Stu isn't with us today. Stuart Deakins is not here because now he's learned to cook in the last week. Stuart is writing a cookbook full of really sort of like simple British food. And it's called A Hearty Stew. That's spelled. That will be available in all good bookshops.
Ooh.
I thought that was quite good. I quite like that. I thought that was
I'm afraid, George, for once, you're not the one who's sacked.
Well, okay, I'll make it my last one then. All right, fair enough. I'll probably do that. Yeah. Right, so today we are joined by another esteemed guest. So again, thanks to Joe Palmer and thanks to Mark Robinson for helping out with getting our esteemed guest on the show. And we have club officials and players. And today we have first team coach, we have Mr. Vaughan Ryan. How are you doing, Vaughan?
Yeah, not better, fellas. You okay?
Yeah, all right. Yes, we're all okay. Barely. Thank you very much. What we always do is you don't have to give us your address, but whereabouts are you joining us from? It's clearly, as we can see, your front room. But whereabouts do you live, roughly?
I'm in Beckenham. I live in Beckenham.
Oh, do you? Oh, okay. You're not far from me then. Oh, okay. Why Beckenham? What drew you over there?
How did I get to Beckenham? I was born in Pimlico. I lived there for many years. Sort of went a bit further southeast, Surrey Quays, and then ended up in Beckenham.
Yeah, right. So, I thought your answer would be how did you get to Beckenham, the A232? But we'll talk about
it. Will you stop it?
Road numbers in a minute. Oh, come on. We'll talk about something. Anyway, so how are you keeping fit? Well, obviously, we've been talking to a lot of the players about what they're doing. They've all got their individual and collective fitness regimes they've got to stick to in the lockdown. But have you got one as well? Because, I mean, you're looking very trim. Not that you weren't before.
Well, I'm a yogi, so I would generally every day I go to an hot yoga class. Obviously, that's been closed down. So I ramped the eating up in my front room and then put an online yoga thing on YouTube or from my yoga studio, and I'll do that for an hour and a half, and that'll get me by it. Generally, nice. My partner will be with me. So we'll do that and then go from there, really. But no, I can't run it. I mean, I'm far too old to run. So it's a lot easier doing yoga.
It's quite beautiful, Vaughan, you being a yogi, because George make lots of boo-boos. Thanks.
And Chris is currently bare. There we go.
I'm currently doing stand up on a nightly basis at YouTube.
So you do hot yoga then?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
oh,
I
hot yoga.
Right.
What's that?
Is that like yoga with really good looking people?
Me and my partner there, so we help. But like,
there's a win.
We generally try. And I mean, in a yoga hot studio, it'd be up to 41 degrees. And then you just flow to that. But I ain't going to get out 41 degrees in my flat unless I stand on the radiators. But I'm not going to, it's just to like generate a bit of heat. But you can do that with breathing as well. So,
please don't stand on your radiators at home, listeners.
Yes, do not try to.
No. I don't recommend that. And I don't recommend ramping it up in your flat either. It's just what I'm doing. So, each to their own.
So you haven't, Chris hasn't given you like a fitness regime you've got to stick to in the off. The time we're off.
No, he'll deal with the players. So I think the players are self-managing at the moment, so they'll be getting their stuff off Chris. But I'm furloughed, so I can't get involved in it anyway. But they know what to do anyway. So they'll just be ticking over and doing what they need to do through Chris. But he ain't he don't do nothing for the staff. Be quite interesting. We did have a crazy staff.
Who would be the fittest out of you and Nick and Glyn, then? Be honest.
What? At the moment, me or Jim Dorsey?
Yeah.
Did they start? Is that, what is it, Wednesday now? They start on Sunday. They might catch up, but I don't know.
Well, that's a nice insight into.
Listen, that ain't a feather in me cap. Let me tell you that.
Yes. But what's the best kind of injury? I was asked that once. What a stupid question, the best injury. Anyway, so as the oldest person here, and I'm actually older than Vaughan by 3 full months, I was there and I saw your debut. Was that 88, your debut?
Yeah, Roger was playing. Played Tottenham 2-2. Tuesday night, was it? Or Wednesday
night? Oh, yes. 87, then, wasn't it?
87, yeah. 87, yeah.
Before their cup final against Coventry.
That was it, yeah. Very eventful. 2-0 down, player sent off, and we drew 2-2.
Brian Gale sent off?
Cayley got sent off.
Intended.
Mistaken identity with Wisely. I don't know how the ref comes back.
Oh, that's twice. There you go. That's the most stupid mistake. You're right. That was very, very funny. I mean, at the time,
was that the days of black and white telly? That
way. Oh, dear, I don't know. I mean, unbelievable. There you go.
Yeah, that was a very strange one.
So, anyway, can I just jump in? I believe that was actually on this date in 1987.
Mm. Was it really?
Yeah.
Well done, George.
Well, we should have known that before. George, if you told us that before, I could have made that sound really slick.
Instead, it's amateurish and, well, pretty much us.
Instead, we've stumbled serendipitously across a very interesting fact. So 33 years ago today. Well, there we go. Happy anniversary to Nico Klassen. I think he scored 2 in that game, if I remember. Anyway, so I was there for that game. I was also there for I saw most of your games, to be honest. When you scored twice in one game, Luton, 7th of September 1991, I actually remember that. 2 goals against Luton. Yeah. Now, I was going to say that I remember I was there for the only 2 goals, but you'd scored 3. Where was the third goal? I don't remember the third goal. I apologise for not remembering your third goal. Where was
I scored on against Charlton in about my 4th appearance. So it'd been the following year when Gordie came, and I scored early on in the season. It would have been around September time against Charlton at home.
Did you?
Yeah.
I should remember. Did we
absolute up? Classic it was.
So much so that I'd forgotten it because I'm at the...
Exactly, yeah. I'm struggling to remember it myself. Yeah, but I definitely did score.
Because the Luton was the first one was a free deflected free kick, wasn't it?
They were 2 set pieces, and one was an header.
Yes, it's
got a great picture. I've got a great picture. A big picture, an A4 picture of all the players jumping on top of me, and it's in front of that half a weight stand where there's no one in it.
That was the smallest ever top division crowd in English football, wasn't it? At the time.
What was it? 4,500? Something like that?
3,500.
Was it?
3,500, which we managed to beat by the Everton game about 93. There was even less. But yeah, I remember that goal for 2 things. A, you scored a header in the 6-yard box, which, to be fair, that wasn't your game, was it, really? You weren't really a game double. But also, there's a fantastic... I don't know if you ever watched that. I think it's Vinny. I think Vinny played in that game. I'm not quite sure. There's a remember a clip on I've seen it on YouTube. Where one player celebrating comes to jump on you, another comes to the other side. Maybe it isn't Vinny. And the player on the left gets absolutely smashed in the face by someone's fist as he tries to jump on you. Is that what we consider a head comeback? I'm not sure who that was. But it was 90. Scalesy. Could have been John Scales. Anyway, we'll look at that. Why not Warren Barton?
I
would find it on YouTube. So listeners, do listen to watch out for that. On YouTube, go for Wimbledon 3, Luton 0, September 91. And just watch, I think it's Warren Barton, get absolutely smashed in the face. Anyway, so it was a great goal celebration. So
we digress.
We do. That's the whole point of this programme. We're digressing. But for listeners who aren't maybe old enough to have watched you play, that majors me and you and Chris, what sort of player would you describe yourself? And can you compare yourself to a modern footballer? Because you played, 82 games for us over a few seasons?
I played. My youth team days, I played mainly as a defender. And then I made my debut at Wimbledon in midfield, which was a culture shock to me, to be fair. So mine was just, I was hardworking, which can be transferred with not the greatest ability. And I just gave, my game became very easy because I had Wisely on the right. So I could win the ball and just roll it to Wisely. I was just an hard-working up-and-down midfielder who understood the game very well. I've always understood the game far better than I played it, even at that early age. That's what got me by. I had a decent footballing brain.
How does that translate on the pitch?
So as a modern-day player?
Yeah.
Midfield players don't go up and down anymore. We were required to go from one box to the other box and all areas in between. So if you was to find a modern day player, I can't think of too many who do that these days. They either sit in front and they have two in front of them who try and break line. I did neither of that. So, you know, I can't think of any modern day players really because the game is different. People tell me it's changed. I don't think it's changed. It's just a bit different. You know, in them days, people I wanted to be like in that era, I wanted to be someone like a Peter Reid. You know, but we were never on the ball like that. That's how I'd envisage.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of player.
I suppose the kind of football we were playing in those days, you did spend a lot of time looking at the ball over your head. I mean, let's be fair. You watch. I defended the style of football we played at the time. Now you look back on old Match of the Days and think, oh my God, it was great to watch because you could see how the other team hated it and the other team's fans couldn't believe what they were watching. But as a midfield player, did you kind of feel left out? Because it was pretty much Dave Besson launching the ball up towards John Fashanu, and maybe your midfield would get, a touch every 10 minutes.
Well, everything we did was off the ball, really. We was never required to go and get on the ball. We was never going to go and get the ball off our back foot. So, you know, it was a waste of time going and doing that. Even if we were 2-0 up or 3-0 up, which we were on many occasions, you never ever went and got the ball off your back foot. You knew where the ball was going to go at specific periods, and you were then in and around the ball to pick the ball up and knock down. You know, the game now is played more on the ball. You know, and to a detriment, players, I've noticed this year really, when the ball's up for grabs, when the ball was up for grabs, i.e. a knockdown, we were there. That was an opportunity for us to get in possession. So we were then, our job then was to go and get the ball and give it to the better players around us. That was our job. And, you know, and generally we would help balls on. You know, very rarely we take more than two touches. And that was a requirement. That was a requirement of how we played. You know, the players who generally would have more time on the ball with the way we played were the four wider players, the right or left back, and the right or left-sided, left wide player.
Yeah.
That is how we played.
Chris?
Yeah, no, I was just saying, I remember it well. We played like that for many years. That was a great time when I was, because I watched them just probably 92, 93 and onwards, and there was always that sort of, you'd have a good couple of skillful players either side, and then lump it into the big fella up front who'd knock it in. That was, I enjoyed watching it at the time.
But it worked, didn't it?
Well, with the terminology, lump it in. Yeah. There was a lot more involved.
Skillfully deliver it into the box.
Well, the areas we got it into, the way we were organised, you know, you've got to remember, you know, a hell of a lot of, you know, I think biggest stroke of luck for us getting to the Premier League or the first division say, under Harry, then with Gordy, was that other teams didn't think our players were very good. So we managed to keep the nucleus of the Winterburns, Bessons, all the ones who ended up getting in the first division, establishing themselves as very good players. And then if we'd lost them leading up to getting to the top flight, we may not have got. So we had a hell of a lot of very, very good players. Yeah. The clubs then came and took from us. You know, for people, you know, wanted to progress or for whatever reasons. But we had very, very good players. You know, there was a lot more involved in it than just whacking it forward, chasing after it, having a bit of a bundle, lobbing it in the box. It might drop someone and he might throw it in. There was a hell of a lot more involved in it then. You know, we were very stat-led. You know, we use all, improvement tools now and analysis tools. We've got, technological ones like Huddle and the games film from 36 different angles and all that. we had all that in different, you know, in a different guise in them days, i.e. people in the stand, collecting data, collecting stats of where we needed the ball at specific times and how we were going to do it. And we also had all our games filmed and broke down by a guy called Vince Graver, who would give us snapshots of what they wanted us to do.
Yeah.
You know, so Harry was very, very, like, you know, very, you know, he was ahead of an awful lot in his time there. You know, and Gordy took that up and brought Don in, and Don was another level. Don was like, and as a foot on a footballing basis, Don was light years ahead of whatever I ever come in, like, into contact with.
Well, Bobby Gould, Bobby says that we wouldn't have won the FA Cup without Don Howe. Simple.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look back over Don's career as well, he was always used at an England level. And when he walked into the building at Wimbledon, it was just like, you know, I'm an Arsenal season. I was home and away. I was an Arsenal fan at the time. When he walked in, I just wanted to go up and just hug him. Because once I worked on it, it was unbelievable. What he didn't know about football wasn't, and if you wanted to learn, he would stay out with you from morning, noon and night. He was just such a great man. And, you know, and that rubbed off on every player who come into contact.
Yeah. George, are you about to speak then?
Huh?
No?
I was just going to comment saying that
yes,
how...
Yes, that's what I meant.
Yeah. How the...
That's what I meant by speak, yeah.
I was just going to comment on, you know, how much you think that... Zetteranos, I know you said about on how and back in the day, but how important is it now? How much is the scouting and the basis of what you're doing now at the club and how much we prepare? How much of that is data analyst based of, you know, what we were doing in the early days in the late 80s?
Well, it's the way you collect it, that you collect the data has moved on. But, you can use as many different techniques or systems to collect the data. If you identify the wrong type of data, you think, or the wrong type of stat that you think is important to win football games, then you're not going to win football games. And to me, them stats, I mean, them, you know, ideals haven't changed from the 80s through to today. You know, I still believe that most goals then were scored by regains in the final third. They definitely are today. You know, and you need to get the ball forward at some stage. You're going to need to, you know, the whole whether you want to pass through lines, you know, and get there a bit slower, or whether you want to take less passes and get there a bit quicker. You know, the important areas are still exactly the same as the way I see it, you know, and that's how I see it.
Is that what you bring to our current coaching setup, that kind of analytical side of it?
I do like that side of it. I mean, I am very much, you know, I can be very much stats-led. I've read an awful lot of books, you know, The Numbers Game, you know, and things like that. I read Moneyball way before it became in vogue, you know, on how it was looked at that. Although it's a totally different sport, you know, I think it's important. Yeah, I think there are certain things you'll want certain types of players to do at certain times on a football field.
Yeah.
You know, but it's all about really players buying into that. You know, you can give them as many stats as they want. You can give them as many examples if you want. If they don't buy into that, then, you know, and to be fair with our lads, they do like, you know, but for me, which I've learned since I've come out of the game, you know, when you're a player, you're being asked to solve problems very quickly. You know, you can go out with plans and how you want to play and all that. You've got 11 players going to try and stop you out of doing that. So the scenarios you might work on during the week will get thrown out the window after 10 minutes on a Saturday or even before that. Now, what you're asking for players to do during that 90 minutes is solve problems. We can all solve problems while we're sitting next to people, looking at a screen with people in front of us, stopping it and going, well, what do you see there? On a football field, you're asked to solve problems like that. Game changes like that. Pitch is changing as quickly as that. Do you need to solve problems very quickly? The players need to be bright. You know, that's what you're asked, you know. And that and how you bring that out of players may not have anything really to do with a footballing sense. It might be more a social side of how the players are, building a relationship with them, outside of the game, you know, to try and get that out, try and get that problem solved inside of them, out of, you know, because for me, as a player, you know, once I went out there on a Saturday, there was very little managers or coaches can do for you. You know, yeah. And you know yourself whether it's going okay or it ain't going great. Now, when it ain't going great, it's the test of how you are, because you've then got to be able to solve it very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you see players sometimes, you know, and I had many examples of this where you don't know, you can't see the wood for the trees because you've just gone emotional. Because you know it ain't going well, you'll start trying harder and trying harder, and you'll just be digging yourself a bigger hole all the time.
Yeah. Is that where you have to back your own ability to get it right at some point?
Yeah, you know, that's an esteem thing, that is, isn't it? That's a self-confidence yeah. thing. And most of the things, from my own experience with that esteem and that confidence you have within yourself, you know, that as you're quite right. When, you know, when it ain't going great, you know, and the chips are down, that's when you've got to back yourself more than ever. And that's when you'll see the true player. You know, and I've had it in my own experience when I thought, you know, and I've gone backwards into my shell when I haven't backed myself to do what you're very good at.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't get on a professional football field at professional level if you're not any good. It's obviously people, fans will go, well, he weren't any good, this one weren't any good. You get there because you're very, very good. You're getting paid very well. But then for you to, like, when it ain't going great for you and all everything's happening very quickly around you and you're coming undone, for you to go back to that and think, right, I'm going to go back to basics. I'm very good at this. I'm just going to dig in and do what I have to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's to do with people's character. That's not to do with their footprint.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So, Chris, have you got a question? Because I've got a stat, but go on.
No, you go with your stat first. Unfortunately,
sure. So, looking at your career, I'm sure people look it up on Wikipedia, but obviously you had a brief loan spell at Sheffield United the year after you won the Cup, and then you left us in 92 and went to Leyton Orient. He played, what, 45, 50 games for Leyton Orient? What happened after that? Because if you look at your playing career stopped at, well, at 27, 28. So that what happened then? What did you do after your spell at Orient finished?
I had a period of life where life weren't very good. You know, I'm not, they call it transition now. I was bitter. I thought the world owed me a living. And I went down a road of, you know, I haven't touched alcohol for 19 years, but I just went and lost myself, really, in the bottom of a beer glass, really.
All right.
You know, and try, you know, and that was it. And I had like 6 or 7 years, really, where my life came apart, really. You know what I mean? My life went from, you know, being a professional footballer 1 minute to like thinking, well, what'd you do the next minute? And right. Something happened in my life. And I've managed to change that. And I've managed to look back at that period, you know, and I'm no different, you know, a hell of a lot of other people have gone down that route. You know, I'm not unique in that, you know, and I don't want sympathy and I don't want a pat on the back. Something happened in my life. I decided to make a change in my life, and I've never really looked back from it. You know, and it's like really my life began again without getting too over dramatic.
No, that makes sense. Yeah.
You know, so, no, it wasn't a great stage in my life. It was like a dark period that, you know, weren't great.
Is that the kind of thing that football needs to learn from? Because let's say you'd worked in a bank for all those years, and then the bank let you go, you'd get another job probably quite quickly in the mid-90s, or they'd help you a bit more. With football, you kind of, once you've come to the end of a contract, you've kind of cut adrift. And both of my kids know people lads who ended up going for academies, or a couple got professional contracts. They come to an end, they're just cut adrift. There's no kind of support. They're like, thanks for all your hard work, off you go, and that's it. They're kind of like dropped into the sea, and they can't swim. Is that where football could learn a bit more and be a bit more helpful to players that, you know, either have issues, like everybody else has issues, or helping them transition from being a footballer to being, you know, a builder or a taxi driver or whatever?
Well, absolutely. You know, we're human beings at the end of the stage. We have, you know, we have all these feelings that are given to us. They're, you know, we don't ask. They're just normal human feelings. And, you know, and what I now know, you know, I'd lost something. I'd lost something very dear, you know, and gave me an awful lot. And it was gone, you know, and I didn't know how to deal with it at that stage. I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know what was happening to me. You know, the only way I decided, you know what I mean, I knew the only comfort I was getting was through the alcohol and substances that I used to try and get me through it. But in the end, them substances nearly killed me. You know, and football needs, it's not, could it? Football needs to learn.
Yeah.
You know, but what players out the game need to know is that we're not unique in it. We're not unique. Addiction doesn't care where you come from. Depression doesn't care where you come from, how much you've got in the bank, how much you had in the bank. You know, and for me, what it was, you know, and it's recovery for me. So recovery became, you know, got very painful for me again at one stage because I couldn't identify how I felt. You know what I mean? So I couldn't tell you how I felt all my life. I never had the confidence to go into Harry. It wasn't so much at Harry at the time. Harry, because my dad died before I joined the Wimbledon Football Club. Right. So Harry and Jeff were very supportive. And when they left, it was like another void. But I sort of done well quickly under Don and Bob. I never had the confidence to go into Bob and say to him, knock on his door, and it's got nothing to do with Bob. And say to him, listen, Bob, I think I've got a problem. I think I need help. Because I would have seen it as a weak. That's got nothing to do with them. That's got nothing to do with the environment I was working. That was down to my own inability to do that. And I think footballing environment or any environment you work in, you need to feel safe enough to hold your hands up and go into someone and say, listen, I need help here.
Yeah. Do you think that now players are a bit more, not aware of their feelings, but a bit happier to do that kind of stuff? Because there's so much support for mental health issues now. And footballers are coming out as these sort of icons of society now saying, it's okay to be depressed. It's okay to cry. It's okay to not to be happy. Do you think that's a positive thing that footballers are held in such high esteem now that they're used for all kinds of good things that maybe you weren't in, you know, in the 90s?
Well, yeah, I think in the football environment I'm in at AFC Wimbledon at the moment, you know what I mean? I would have thought the hardest thing for some of us to do is to be vulnerable in their moment. It's just like to be vulnerable. Most of the time, you know, chest beating is a bit of bravado and mask what you're, you know, something that you're frightened to show. You know, and footballers aren't immune from depression.
No, of course not.
And the bog standard thing might be when people looking in or people who might show a bit of ignorance towards it was, well, how can they be depressed? They've got a lovely house, they've got this, they've got that, they've got, you know, how can they be depressed? Well, all the money in the world won't take away from how you feel. You know, I know some of the richest men in the world who really have got nothing, really, because they're just so, you know, they're just so unhappy.
Yeah.
You know, and what I've learned as well is that my happiness, you know, it's an inward job. You know, I mean, I get dirty on the inside. I come undone emotionally from the inside. So it doesn't matter how much money I've got, what woman I've got on my arm, what house I live in. You know, all that validation in the world, I have to learn to give that to myself. You know, so some days I have to look in the mirror and pat Vaughan on them. You know, and them sort of things. And they're the things I could never do. I always needed to look at someone and go, how am I doing? How do you think I'm doing? Because I was chronically insecure with my, you know. So what I would like is if players were that open, could just come in and say, you know, look, I've got a problem here. I've got a problem. I need help. Because, you know, the football industry is no different to any other industry in the world. And once you open up and have the courage to say, I need help, it'd be like having a gas cooker lifted off your back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there are people there now. And it's a lot more open. Who will help?
Yeah. That's society in general, isn't it? Well, I'm sorry to bring that up, but I thought it was a fascinating sort of insight.
Don't be sorry.
Into your playing career. So we're going to lighten the mood slightly now. George, would you want to introduce the game?
Yeah, so this is the first game that we're going to play. It's a guess the player game. So it's a current AFC Wimbledon player. There are three rounds of clues. The first round of clues is five players this player has played with in the past. The second round of clues is two managers this player has played under. And the final clue is a giveaway sort of clue if nobody's been able to guess who it is yet. So does that make sense?
Go on.
That's encouraging.
To sum up, I'm going to translate that. So you'll get given five players that a current AFC Wimbledon player has played with, and you have to guess which player that is from those clues. If you don't get it right, there's two more rounds. But so far, Aaron Ramsdale is winning when he got his answer right in less than 4 seconds. So we did ask George to make it slightly trickier.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm pleased to say I've achieved that.
Good. Go on, then. Well, you say that now. Right, let's see. Go on.
Okay, so the five players.
Go for it.
Ryan Shotton, Dale Stevens, Sam Klukas, Michael Smith, and Mark McNulty.
Luke O'Neill.
No, not Luke O'Neill.
Ryan Shotton. He's playing. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Are they loanees as well?
They've been on loan at the same club as each other at times.
Are we talking about our loanee players as well or not?
No, just a current, permanent contracted player for us.
Yes, okay.
Callum Riley.
No, not Callum Riley.
Ryan Shotton's played for. Oh. Hang on. Ryan Shotton's played for Birmingham, Derby, Stoke, Middlesbrough. Maybe somebody else. Who's played for Middlesbrough that we've got? Wow. Who's the other players, George?
Okay, so
Sam Klukas.
Ryan Shotton, Sam Klukas, Dale Stevens, Michael Smith, and Mark McNulty.
The Klukas was what? Hereford, Chesterfield, Hull, and Swansea.
Oh, shoot.
So which of our players has played for Hull or Swansea or Hereford? Oh, can I have a guess if Vaughan's not... Vaughan, do you want a third guess?
Go on, Kev. Go on, you go.
Is it, George, is it Rod McDonald?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I thought you said it was going to be more tricky, George.
Well, yeah, I'm
taking my glory away there. So he played with Ryan Shotton at what club?
Stoke,
of course, got Robert Stoke.
Dale Stevens at Oldham, Sam Klukas at Hereford, Michael Smith at Northampton, and Mark McNulty at Coventry.
Wow. Who was the two managers he played under that would have especially helped?
Justin Edinburgh and Mark Robin.
Edinburgh at where?
Northampton. And Robin's at Coventry.
Ah.
Good question, George.
Yeah.
Like that.
and factually correct, unlike the one before last.
We don't bring it up anymore.
George had managed to imagine that Barry Fuller had played for Chris Wilder at some other club, but he hadn't, which made guessing the identity of the player very difficult when one of the clues was completely and utterly wrong. so
nothing bitter about it, Kev.
No bitterness, no at all.
I thought it was quite fun. Anyway, sorry for spoiling it, but I got that right. That's nice. Vaughan, away from football then, so after your issues, which again are not unfamiliar to most of us, then you, am I right in thinking you were a taxi driver at some point?
Yeah, I am, yeah. I've got a black cab badge, I've got a license, yeah.
So when were you active? Because I used to use quite a lot of cabs. I don't think I ever got into your cab, because I would have recognised you.
When have I had it? 2003.
Okay.
2003. I got me license, and I've still got it today. I mean, we've been helping out. They contacted us for some of the frontline services to go in recently, but I went in for about 3 days, and there wasn't any demand really. So it was just I was told not to come back in anymore, but yeah, the cab's been a godsend to me, really. Gives me great freedom. You know, it gives me a chance to be my own boss. It can be a bit of a think tank, but, you know, it's all right. You never know who's going to get in next.
So you still have it now? You're still...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I still work it now. Yeah, I'll always keep it, until they take it away through health reasons. It was too hard to get. Far too hard. I mean, you'd never ever do the knowledge if you knew what it entailed. You'd never do it. You know, I mean, you just wouldn't, like going out on your bike in all given weathers. You know, I mean, you just never do it. It's too much. It takes, you know. And although they are a bit more human, yeah, and don't get me wrong, it's great testing. I mean, you'd never, like, the carriage of it, the people who interview you are just like subhuman. I mean, honestly, it's just like unbelievable.
We've all had bosses like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm frightened. You know what I mean? It's just like, and then like, at the end of it, when they give you your bag, like, they become human. It's like, it's unbelievable. And they're brilliant at it. They're just like, you can go in there, and I mean, literally come out at the end of it. Like, you're only in there for like 10 minutes at the most, you know, not even knowing your name. And they're just like, get you in such a state.
It reminds me of my training. I did 16 weeks at Hendon, 2010. And to start with, they almost pin you to the wall or pin you down and make you do things over and over by rote. But then the end of it, they're all in the pub with you and they're your best mates. It's just, it's peculiar.
But Chris, that's what we were under the Met, weren't we? When I did the knowledge, they were all ex-police officers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it was all ex, and I rank in one. Well, and they were just unbelievable. I was just not.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, you laugh at it now, and you'll never forget them. I don't ever. No. I know all their names. I know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, it was, you know, you've been through it. So, you know what I mean? I'm sure they would have used on us what they learned in their days in the police. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, it might have been a bit different, but yeah. It's changed a lot now.
So does it come in handy in terms of driving from where you live to training every day, or when we were doing that? So if there was a blockage or some congestion or an accident, you haven't got to think, oh, I wonder how I'm going to get there. It's just a natural thing because you've got the knowledge and all the maps of London in your head.
It does help that on that, you know. But generally, I'll leave so early in the morning. I haven't hit anything because it caught me out. Because from where I am, although it ain't that far in miles, but it's nothing really. But the times if I went at a normal time, it would say like a 40-minute journey.
Yeah.
You're just hitting every school coming out, you know, every school from here to, you know, New Malden. It would take me like 2.5 hours. So I generally leave about 5:30 in the morning and get there for about 5 to 6. I mean, get there for like 6:20 or something in the morning and just, that's it, you know what I mean? So it beats all the traffic.
Do you drive
I
to
don't
training
really
in
like,
your taxi?
What's that?
You drive to training in your taxi?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Right. So I still take the cab out. Certain nights I'll still go out in the cab.
I just imagine it. The idea, this is what I love about this football club. Imagine we're in the same division as Sunderland. Can you imagine Sunderland's first team coach driving the taxi? I think it's great. I love it. The film about us, the whole let Sunderland till I die. Who's
who are they anyway?
One more till I die. Make a much better film, I think.
He's trying to win it. I hope he'll still make one. Ben, so.
Yeah, well, maybe. So let's talk about. Can we talk about football briefly? Yeah, but. I don't want to go into the brain again and that kind of stuff. We've covered that.
What is football? I've forgotten,
yeah. I mean, I know you probably can't comment on what you would like to see happen, but what do you think is going to happen? Because, I mean, there's every day news of leagues being cancelled, and we've obviously got no idea when we're going to come back to football. And then the great scheme of things we'd say is every day, we know it's not important, but it's important to us because this is how we know each other. And this is, you know, we've seen you play and you know, we come and watch every week. How do you think the season is actually going to pan out? Do you think, I mean, the idea of Premier League playing behind closed doors on the TV, that makes a bit of sense. But is there sense in that for Accrington against Burton or for us against Coventry on TV? Is that on behind closed doors? It's a difficult thing to imagine ever happening, but that's where we are. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, what I think is going to happen, football is going to be led by what the government tell us to do. I mean, football can be united in wanting to finish and wanting to get it done. But how that's going to look, I'm not too sure. And look, you know, I'm not one of these people who are involved in football who says I'm a fan. I am a fan. That's what I believe the game's about. I mean, and playing it behind closed doors just doesn't appeal to me. You know, I mean, I'm, what's that going to look like? You know, how's that going to be? You know what I mean? Especially, you know, I honestly don't. I mean, I've got a feeling what's going to happen. You know, look, the conference the National League have said today that they're done. Now, yeah. All right, I know that in terms of finance, the Premier League's a million miles away from that, but the Premier League's going to have to do what government says. And if you look at what other governments are rolling out of how you're going to come out of this worldwide, you know, you're talking about small gatherings. Well, let's get side on and say they're going to play behind closed doors. What's that going to look like? Well, it's going to just be the playing staff. There's going to be gatherings of 50 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Minimum. There's going to be 50 people. Now, I don't know how long social distancing is. Well, how are you going to socially distance on a football field?
Well, yeah.
So unless we get some sort of testing in place and vaccine very quickly, I can't see this going away quickly. So I don't know how it really done what I'm listening to or seeing. You know, not all, unless it's all of a sudden it'll be a light switch and we're all back to normal. Here we go.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because they're saying in Ireland, they're saying that they're looking at restarting gatherings. Obviously, Ireland have dealt with it pretty well. Restarting gatherings up to 5,000. Of course, you don't get crowds of 5,000 in the League of Ireland. So it's quite happy for football to come back there because they get, you know, even the top teams, you're looking at sort of Shamrock Rovers and St. Patrick's, don't get anywhere near 5,000. But it's just the idea of, you know, 78,000 people packing into Old Trafford, one person coughs, then what? I mean, that's the issue, isn't it? And but looking at it from our level, I know Andy Holt from Accrington was saying that they would lose more money if they play behind closed doors than if they don't, if they stop the season. That's got to be thought about, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you know, the further, you know, even if you go down to championship level, football clubs are dependent on the revenue that match days bring in.
Yeah.
All, you know, all down. You know, and I would have thought they even are Premier League to some extent. You know, but like at our level, and you know what we're talking about with action and that, you know, I don't know what it would look like to play behind closed doors or what it would feel like. You know, and if you're, I mean, and you know, there's a part, I know that, you know, there's a part where we've got our honour fit, but, you know, how's it going to, you know, what's it going to be like for the people involved in it? If you're just going out, so I'll just get the game done. You know, just get the game done, so we can get the season done and then roll on to next season. It's unprecedented time, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I don't think you're not going to please all the people at
all. Oh, no. You've also got the idea of the money involved. The money involved is ridiculous. And then I know you're saying, do you have to have police involved in a behind the closed doors game? Maybe you do, because fans might turn up. That's the issue, surely, Chris.
That would be locally dealt with. So basically, what you'd have is the people who are on shift, if necessary, would be called down, and they'd have to deal with it. Police are only ever at matches, and they're only ever supposed to stay outside the ground. And it's only then when clubs pay that the police go inside the ground.
Right.
You've probably seen it often. There's only football spotters that ever come into King's Meadow, for example. You never see the people on the outside coming in because it would cost us a fortune. Similarly, with the big stadia, you might get maybe 7 coppers to go down in a rowdy bus and sit around there in case anything happened, but you won't see a massive number of police officers there at all.
So, okay. Chris, going on from that, would whatever sort of like when they start opening it back up, would the government allow? Would it have the capacity to allow frontline services, police, ambulances, to be deployed to football in and around football ground? Or would it say these are going to be? Go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say that's the million-dollar question. I mean, I'm not certain, and you'll know better than me, obviously, because you're there. How many ambulance service, for example, go there? I might be wrong. I think it's only a couple that stay for the whole game, and then if something happens, we just do the normal thing and call an ambulance. It might be something like that. So you'll have your physios there, who will make a decision and then call the resources if they need them, same as you would if you were in your house and you had a fall. Similarly with the police, if something did happen that needed to come in, it would be a straight 909 call by the club secretary or whatever. It may be that they have to do that sort of thing.
Right.
I mean, to be honest, when you said earlier about how we're looking at the government
to make that judgment for us. With all the things I'm sure everybody's read about the laws that have been brought in, the fines, etc., we haven't even got our heads around that yet, and it's been 6 weeks. So Lord knows what's going to happen, to be fair.
Well, we just don't know, but it's a busy, what a time to be alive. So before we go, we're going to let you go in a sec, we've got one more game in a minute. But as someone who played at Plough Lane, the idea of going back, as a fan, the idea of going back to Plough Lane to me is a great thing. Have you been to the stadium? And B, are you excited as a football fan to be going back to where we start? Well, where we started. Historians will tell me that's not true, but where we've been for many, many years.
I drive past every day on the way in.
You know what you mean.
You know, I think it'd be the icing on the cake for me. It'd just be like, you know, I want to. I mean, I can't wait to get back there. You know what I mean? And once we're back there, the club will be back where it should be, and we just carries on going from strength to strength. You know, it's where I started. It's like, especially but where it is. You know what I mean? Like, stone throw on the back of where it was, you know, for me. And sure, like many other fans, it would just be what this club's about, really.
Yeah. You know? So, but to what age were you when you joined the club then?
I joined when I was 12. So what's that, 1980?
Mm.
1980.
Yeah.
So I used to come as an associated schoolboy.
Associated schoolboy. I knew another one, but who didn't ever get anywhere? Associated schoolboys. Thank you for that. Reminded me of that.
Yeah, associated schoolboy would train behind the goal. Start, like there was a behind the terrace, the Durnsford Road terrace.
Yeah.
There was an area behind there. We used to train there, and then come in on school holidays. Like to train. So 1980, I would have joined the club.
Yeah.
Just signed as a schoolboy and then signed as an apprentice. Yeah.
Wow. The apprenticeships. That anybody under the age of 40 needs an apprenticeship as a footballer. Yes, that was what you...
Then to be fair, in my pre-education in football, I've come into contact with scholars, what they're called now, and ex-scholars on courses and that. And I was saying about I value the jobs and, you know, it gave me a grounding.
Yeah.
And one of the kids, a younger kid said to me, well, no, I don't agree with him. I said, then why? He went, well, I never joined a football club to learn how to paint the fence. I didn't learn it out of clean booth. And just to see the totally different, like,
yeah.
Couldn't argue. I mean, I couldn't argue. I just, to see, like, when we were told, go and paint that fence, go and sweep that terrace, go and clean them booth. I thought I just wanted to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just complete, just done it. And had a laugh doing it, you know. And I thought it gave me a good grounding. But I could see the other side of the thing. Why on earth do I want to clean boots or paint a fence? I want to be a footballer.
So whose boots were you cleaning in those days?
I cleaned Nigel's to start. Nigel's and Wally's to start off with. I got Odgy's as well. Now the people where Wally kept getting injured, so he was up. But Nigel was always playing. So,
yeah.
And he was good, and he used to stay in digs with a lady down in Rains Park. Some days I'd forgot something and I'd had to run from Pimlico over back to Rains Park. But Nigel was brilliant. Wally. And then I got Odge. Odge weren't very...
Hello.
Wally and Nigel used to really give you a good tip. Odge used to just like... but he'd give me other tips in his life. So
well, that's nice. Yeah, that's a bit of a character, inside character knowledge. Excellent, lovely, thank you for that. Right, George, we have another... Shall I do this game?
You're doing it, Kev.
Am I doing this game? Okay, so, Vaughan, this is a game that used to be called the yes-no game until we realised that most of the answers weren't yes or no. so it's the yes-no slash either-or game. There are 10 questions. All we'd like from you is your immediate answer, yes or no, or the choice of the two we're giving. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, ready? Right. So, here we go. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No.
Correct. Abandon the season or play to a finish behind closed doors?
Yes. No.
It's not a yes or no question.
There you go. Go on.
Did Carol Baskin kill her husband? Yes or no?
No.
Virgin Airlines, bailout or boycott?
Boycott.
Good. Talking of cricket, Michael Vaughan or Johnny Vaughan?
Michael Vaughan.
Von Ryan's Express or Ryan's Daughter?
Ryan's Express.
That's a good one. A week in Barbados with Wally Downs or a week in Bexhill-on-Sea with Kelly Brook?
Barbados with Wally.
Okay. VAR, yes or no?
Sorry?
VAR, no. Yes or no?
No.
Okay.
No.
Here are the three important questions. Luton or Watford?
Watford.
Good, the right answer.
Not doing the show. Excellent. Right. Should we sack George? Yes or no?
No.
Or should we sack me? Yes or no?
No.
Thank you. When you're making tea, we did discover that Mitch Pinnock had never made a cup of tea. When you're making
there you
tea,
go.
Bag first or milk first?
No, bag first.
That's well. The only
good answer.
Good answer. James Shea is the only player to ever say milk first, and then apparently about a week later he asked, could he change his answer, which is quite nice. But
I got absolutely annihilated for making tea for people for a year. I put the tea bag in first,
yeah,
and then poured the milk on top of it, and some right. woman screamed at me and said to me, no, dear, you've got to let the tea bag breathe. It was at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I wasn't very happy at the time. I nearly told her what to do about breathing tea bags. But there you go.
That was before the triangular pyramid tea bags. Breathe on their own. Anyway, so that's Vaughan. That's been a great guest. Thanks so much. Very insightful. Into territories we didn't necessarily expect. But thanks so much, Lee, for your time. It's been great fun.
Cheers, fellas. Yeah,
and we'll see you hopefully at the new ground. Hopefully. It would be annoying, the first game at the new, I'm going to call it New Plough Lane, Tommy Walgar, the new stadium at Plough Lane, if that has to be played behind closed doors. What a kick in the teeth that would be. But anyway, let's hope that doesn't happen. Vaughan, thanks for watching, Dean. We'll see you next season, I would imagine.
Cheers, fellas.
Right, well, cheers. Stay. Sorry, listeners, we went in a bit deep territory there, but I wasn't expecting to do that. But
I'd like to also apologise for my terrible sound quality on today's episode. Would you believe it's the dog's fault, everyone? I didn't realise I was still communicating with you whilst having to deal with a rather rambunctious dog.
Right. Okay,
who we have just fostered from Romania.
Oh.
There you go. That's my stat for the day. A dog from Romania. It's a Romanian rescue charity. They go out there because dogs are left to roam wild.
They are.
And that in the shelters, if they're not collected over a certain amount of time, they are dispatched in various terrible ways. So we have done our bit and fostered a dog from Romania.
Are you learning Romanian?
I am not. I'm just shouting out at the dog. Luckily, I hope that you didn't hear that.
No, because I've just interviewed a Romanian actress called Andrea Helen David.
Ask him if he knows her.
No. You might have acted with her. No, I was going to say, maybe if you need any lessons.
Oh, Romanian lessons. I think the missus might tell me where to stick that idea.
Well, it'd be quite simple. It was Romanian for sit and stay. I think it'd be quite handy.
Yeah, but a lot of people in England don't know the English sit and stay at the minute.
That's so. Also very true. Also very true. Right, anyway. Well, we've got two little things to do then. So, random news stories of the day. George, unfortunately, Vaughan Ryan's kind of nicked your story, hasn't he? But do it anyway.
Is it about football?
Yes, it is.
Weirdly enough, yes, it is. Someone's going to make a lot of money betting on that one.
Go on, George.
The story, it was touched on by Vaughan Ryan as the National League of today announced they're cancelling all their remaining fixtures.
Yep.
But they haven't put any word out yet on what that means for promotion relegation. And that's going to be really interesting because I've been temp for a few weeks now. The conference was the last league that needed to do something before the Football League could officially go out and say, yeah, we need to probably cancel our season now. And now the conference have finally done it. It'll be interesting to see what they do in terms of promotion relegation.
Yeah.
But it's another step towards our season being cancelled and either points per game, which makes us safe, or having it null and void.
Either way, we're not going down. Yeah, so the next stage is another vote on, okay, we're going to cancel the season, but now what? Said I'm good friends with the press officer at Ebbsfleet. They would be relegated by 0.02%, which is quite the lowest amount of, well, it's the smallest margin anyone's ever been relegated by.
Well, Tranmere will be 0.04.
Well, there you go. So actually,
they're relegated.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's not 0.02, so I'm fine with that. Chris, what is your story of the day?
My story of the day, because apparently we have to have a X or Y day for everything these days, whether it be a taco day or a kitchen day or something like that. Today's day, apparently, is Stephen Lawrence Day, where everyone's reminded about the terrible circumstances of the death of Stephen Lawrence and how basically the police popped up the investigation. My story of the day is Stephen Lawrence Day, and I'm not saying anything else.
Fine.
No. I have signed the stick back, and I will stick to it.
Well, okay, let's get back to slightly more cheerful.
Yes, let's.
So I think mine
comes under the category of, you know, it's a slow news day when.
When? Oh, yeah.
News story on the BBC website. Toddler racks up eye-watering £20 Deliveroo onions bill. A family have into a bit of a pickle after discovering their toddler had placed a Deliveroo order for onions at the eye-watering price, again the same joke, of £20. One-year-old Alice, no surname, from London was playing with her dad's phone when she accidentally ordered the vegetables from Morrison's. The onions cost just £1.50. But with a small order fee, the bill came to £19.99. Her parents say they've since made a curry with the expensive onions. This is on the BBC website, everyone. The BBC website. There is an accompanying video of the baby holding a packet of three onions in a string bag. Now,
and that is why we need to put back, because we need to make sure stories like that are never featured in the news again.
Now, on this occasion, George, I think you're quite right. That is an extraordinary story. So, things to do in lockdown. Chris?
Do you know what? I wasn't prepared for this one.
I'm sorry.
Although, having said that, in this last week, I have built a very small patio in my back garden. So that is a thing you could do in lockdown, should you have a back garden and a lot of bricks to spare.
Wow, that's very impressive. George, is yours about sport?
Strangely enough, yes.
Okay, what is it, George?
So mine is going to be on Friday from 1 a.m. The event starts. It's the annual NFL draft. That's this Friday at 1 a.m. and it's on Sky Sport.
So, that's something I should learn about, really, as he stands here. Although, obviously, you know, for those of us listening who can't see us, I'm standing here in my Patriots jersey and I should have known that, really.
Yes.
So where everything's been done at home, so the players find out.
Yeah,
at home.
Yeah, they're doing it over Zoom.
Yeah.
How many players get picked in this draft?
They're doing 32 on the first night.
Yes, wow.
Yeah,
a lot of people get picked for this. It's an interesting idea, and it might even out. And that's too many evens. Even out certain things in the Premier League and Championship. We start doing things like that. There.
Yes.
Of course, right.
No.
We're much driven jousters, but, you know, not a bad thing to think about.
That's an interesting way of doing it, isn't it? There we go. Okay, well, that's you've done that. My one, I'm going to go again. Music, I'm sticking to this. Albums I haven't played for a long time. I've played two this morning, worked to these two. The Matthew Good Band, a Canadian band who are, well, he's now solo, Matthew Good. Their second album, Underdogs, which I bought from a record shop in Toronto in 1999, and that's one of the best albums I've ever heard, and I haven't played it for about 4 or 5 years. I've now played it twice today. And also, from 1995, Catherine Wheel's album, Happy Days, which is a cracking
one. Good grief.
Remember Catherine Wheel?
It's been for a long time, yeah.
Oh, no, hence the feature. Neither have I.
Haven't heard it for ages.
Yeah, Happy Days, and then followed by Cats and Dogs. Good, two good albums. Well, they're two good albums, but they're two of them. So Catherine Wheel, Happy Days, Matthew Good Band, Underdogs. Go and listen to those albums. You can find them on Spotify. So, we've got very, very short time left. Minute and a half. Or a bit longer than that. Birthdays game, George. Do you have some famous people and some mirror readers for Chris and I to guess the age of?
Yes, we have 5 celebrities and a mirror reader to keep an unnamed presenter happy.
Okay, Conan.
Okay, so the first one. I'm hopeful Chris will get this. NFL running back, Marshawn Lynn.
No, not a clue. 31.
27.
He is, in fact, 35.
Oh, wow. Well, is he really? He hasn't been around that long. Well, maybe he has.
No, I think he was drafted quite late.
Must have been. What, like when he was retired?
Yeah. Well, okay, second celebrity is actress and wife Amber Heard.
Actress and wife at the moment, Amber Heard. We make that absolutely clear.
Yes. Soon to be ex-wife, Amber Heard.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, allegedly.
Amber's only about 28, I think.
Oh, Johnny Depp?
Yes.
Yes.
I think she's older than that. I'd say 31.
She is, in fact, 34.
Wow. There you go.
Now, for the
first like record. Toddler. Anyway.
Now, centre back and player copy in my head, David Luiz.
David Luiz, 32 today, I think.
36.
Oh, he is in fact 33.
Oh, yeah. I was right yesterday.
Yeah.
After... Mike was he 32 yesterday?
Yes.
And now he's 33. Oh, I suppose, yes.
Right, yes. Yeah. That's how numbers work.
Anyway.
Numbers work consecutively in numerical order, oddly enough. go on, George.
Okay, Jack Nicholson.
Oh, Jack Nicholson. Go on, Chris. Do you want to go first?
I think he's hit. He might have hit 80 now.
That was my first thought. I'm going to say 79 then.
Yeah.
George?
He is 83.
Is he really?
Wow. I thought he'd have hit 80, but blimey.
Hmm.
And finally, and our final celebrity before we go into everyone's favourite section, our final celebrity, Brazilian attacking midfielder, Kaká.
Kaká.
Blimey. When was he last in there?
He played for Orlando City, his last
team. Yeah, when he was last World Cup, how old was he?
I'm going to say 37, George.
Yeah, I would say around that, about 35, maybe 36. 35.
He is 38.
Oh, well, close enough.
Well, would you really make the difference?
And finally, Mirror Reader.
Yes.
Mirror Reader, Anne Critchell.
Now, I know Anne.
Do you?
No. 47.
77.
She is 80.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, I think Kevin conclusively wins that one.
Yeah, I think I won that one. That's close enough. Well, there we are. That's lovely. So there you go. So thanks for listening. Now, of course, we do have other shows this week. George, what are the scores, George Jones? What's going on the rest of the week in terms of 9 years podcast, George? Because I don't know.
Well, our next show is going to be coming out on Friday, which will be your regular podcast, where I will be joined by the regulars, Nick Draper and Stuart Deacon.
You will be joined by them?
Yes, where we will be reviewing...
That's not how that works. You know
it. No, it isn't.
They'll not allow you in again.
But we will be reviewing the conference years in our review of King's Meadow, so we will be looking back at the 09-10 and 10-11 season.
Well, have a nice time. That'll be fun.
They obviously don't want us, Kevin. We get the hint. Oh, quite frankly.
Well, no, I think that's fine. You don't not want to hog it. So, well, enjoy that perennial, George. With your
I thought perennial was some sort of plant.
Perennial just means it's there all round. All the time.
Yeah. Okay.
George is a plant, isn't it?
George is a plant.
He's a plant.
Both definitions work.
I knew it.
Sorry, George, you've been very insulted today, but you miss it. But you keep coming back, and you're coming back on Friday.
He keeps doing it. I don't know what he's doing.
I know. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Oh, well, there we go. Anyway. Well, listeners, stay safe, stay sane. No football for the time being. We don't know when that's going to happen. But there are other things to do, as we said. You can build a patio. You can watch the NFL draft. You can listen to records that you've never heard of. So, you know, there's other stuff to do.
Don't order onions online.
But don't order onions online. Not if you're 1 year old. No, 2 year old, absolutely fine. So, thanks for listening. So, thank you for listening. From us, the development squad, featuring one under 23. Thanks very much indeed. And you'll hear from us again shortly. Tune in for Friday's show. Thanks.